And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Lost Podcast of Titan, a father and son journey through the sci-fi series Ignited Generations. My name is Jeremiah.
My name is Michael.
And we are the father and son in question. Contain your surprise. So,
curb your enthusiasm.
We can't say that. That's copyrighted.
So, oh, come on. More than one person has used that. Let them drag me in the court over that.
Listen, right. Like Paris Hilton tried to copyright So Hot. So,
well, Paris Hilton was an idiot. So,
well, this is also true. But that's a lie. She's actually very intelligent. She's managed to milk. This for like 25 years, and she still looks 23. So, there you go.
Well, eventually technology is going to reach its limits with her, and
that's right. But we are still in our journey of Star Trek: The Animated Series. We are now going to be discussing Episode 2, Yesteryear. What did you think of Yesteryear?
I will agree with a lot of people and say it's one of the best episodes of the animated series. Considering that it's the only one that Gene Roddenberry officially accepts as canonical.
What? He didn't accept anything else in the animated series as canonical?
Apparently, according to what I've read.
Well, he's a liar, a hack, and fraud. So I'm not entirely surprised.
As written by DC Fontana, our favorite.
Oh, that's why it's not that bad. Awesome.
People point to this as maybe her best effort.
Really?
Yes. Well, unless you want to say the Questor tapes, which she also wrote.
Anyway.
Getting back to the episode.
I like the one where it's like wife attend. But anyway. So let's see. Brief summary of the episode. Captain and the crew are actually revisiting a concept from the original series episode, the Guardian of Time, actually doing historical studies and travels. And all of a sudden, for whatever reason, Spock no longer exists in the timeline. It's the Andorian. There's an Andorian replacement. Only Spock and only Kirk seem to recognize something's amiss, and they track it down, and it has to have been an incident in Vulcan's past where Spock had to save his younger self from a rite of trial passage where he almost died, because logically, if you're the most logical species in the entire galaxy, you send your children into the wild, dangerous wilderness for them to die. Of course, that's what you do. And in the process of returning back, he recognizes some of the foundational points of his life. You know, why he decided to lean more towards Vulcan than human, et cetera, that gets to say hello to his father and his mother. And basically he ensures that things happen somewhat how they were supposed to, and that the timeline has righted itself.
As much as he could.
Yes. I liked the episode. I did have some issues with it. The premise... Well, Did you catch the premise when they first arrived, what time period they were studying?
They're looking at something in the past on the dawn of the Orion civilization.
No, that was where Kirk and Spock were, but there were other time travelers, and they were researching what?
Vulcan.
Did you catch the time frame they were studying?
Yeah.
What the fuck are they doing? They have the Guardian of Time. They could go at any point in any place in history, and they decide to go 20 to 30 years ago in Vulcan's past. Like,
what is it? Yeah, what is it about there that's a mystery that's worth researching?
I'm sorry. Yeah, what are you doing? What historian was desperately invested in finding out the secrets of Vulcan society 20 to 30 years ago?
Well, I have a sort of an answer that, you know, is Sarek. He wanted more extensive notes for his autobiography entitled "I Am Not a Romulan Spy." So
he was definitely a Romulan spy. Just so we're clear.
but apparently...
And his wife was in on it. She got off on it. That's just the only solution. She liked the idea of sleeping with a Romulan spy. It's what got her off. Can't blame her, really.
But yeah, if I had an opportunity to visit the Guardian of Forever and take pictures and stuff, I could probably come up with something more interesting to study.
Yeah, and the fact that they had to not touch anything, which makes sense, but that also is incredibly dangerous.
Yeah, I can understand going to the Guardian of Time and asking for a certain time period to be shown.
Or wait,
so that
Guardian of Forever? Is it the Guardian of Forever?
Yeah.
Okay, well, so it's not the Guardian of Time, it's the Guardian of Forever. Right?
That's what I always remember.
Okay.
The Guardian of Forever, yeah, I just checked.
Okay, anyway.
But why would it be necessary? In fact, like you said, it's rather dangerous. Go directly back into a time period. Because we now see what happened. And I think if they were just scanning recent Vulcan history, or fairly recent Vulcan history, nothing amiss would have happened. But the fact that at that point, Spock was out of the current timeline aggravated the problem and made it easier for whatever happened to happen and Spock, be written out.
Right, yeah. And I'm also... Go ahead.
No.
I was also... the end of the episode... Hold on. When did the Andorian and Spock have their conversation? Because I remember there was like this moment of I return and things were right and you will fade. And the Andorian is like, fuck it.
No, I think he, instead of being completely destroyed, the Andorian would simply be...
He just has a new timeline. But that's right. But he doesn't know. Like, it could be that he's just gone, and he's just completely comfortable with that. And I always thought that was... I can't imagine being in that situation. Like,
well, as he pointed out, one of the most fervent Andorian... concepts is family.
Mm-hmm.
So apparently that was enough for him to accept what could have happened, but I can't see the fact that he actually existed.
Yeah.
In this revised timeline meant that he was supposed to be somewhere else.
Yeah.
Which makes me wonder dead. If he was the only, what other shufflings took place because of this mishap involving Spock?
Yeah. So that
Harry Mudd finds himself president of the Federation.
Oh, that would be a great episode. don't even dismiss that. It writes itself. Captain Kirk, welcome.
You kiss my ring. Kirk says, I'd rather kiss something else, but
what? No.
Nothing.
As president of the Federation, I inquire about how to make some money.
As if being president of, kind of makes, what does president of the Federation get on a yearly basis in terms of considering the cockeyed economics of Roddenberry's future?
Probably just a free bowl of gumbo at the local Cisco restaurant in Louisiana.
Extra pats of butter, stuff like
that. an extra scoop of ice cream, two scoops. Yeah.
Parking space.
So the thing is, it's like, I could have sworn, because this is one of the few episodes that I remember vaguely seeing, that I knew the concept of, but I could remember, and I can see it in my head, but I didn't see it in this episode, where there is a conversation between Spock and Sarek, where Sarek recognizes, like there's a moment where Sarek perks his eyebrow and says, it's kind of implied that he knows something's off, but doesn't quite know what. But I could have sworn, like, near the end of the episode, before they return to the normal time, Sarek recognizes Spock as his son from another time. Doesn't inquire too much, only,
No, yeah. you're thinking of something else.
Okay. Do you know what I'm talking about? Is that something
I know else? I know what you're talking about. It may have been in one of the No, he wasn't. No, I think, God, now I can't remember the actor's name. I think he had already passed on by the time they started making
The Next Generation?
No, he was alive in The Next Generation, but I'm talking about in the later, the Abramsverse Star Trek.
Oh.
Of which little shall be said.
Yeah.
But no, you might be confusing it with some other characters and such.
Okay. Well, can't win them all. Also, when going back into the past of Vulcan, for being such emotionless, logical little shits, the kids are incredibly
really?
Emotional.
Thank you.
Like, what the fuck is this nonsense? Oh, you're a human. You're emotional. You're not ruled by logic. And I'm like, motherfucker.
Pushing him around and stuff like that.
What's the logic of this? This is like the Pon Farr episode where, you know.
No wonder the Vulcan parents are sending their kids out into the hostile wilderness.
To die. Yeah. The only reason he survived is because he was half Romulan. That's right. I went there. I connected the dots.
Well, yeah, but yeah, as you pointed out, this is the second time we've been to Vulcan since Amok time, which really all we saw Vulcan during that episode
was the fuck pit.
Well, for want of a better term, yeah. So,
and even then, that wasn't logical. That was emotional. It was logical to want Spock, but emotionally, she wanted
this loser that she showed up. Stan.
Yeah, that guy. Yeah. So I'm beginning to, you know, suspect that maybe Vulcans are not as logical as they pretend. Like, it's the greatest scam ever perpetuated upon the galaxy. It's like, all Vulcans are logical, all Klingons are honorable, all Romulans are conniving and sneaking, and it's all complete fabrication. They're none of those things. They are just masters at pretending. They get away with it. Like, no Klingon has ever fired a shot in anger. They don't have to because they look so aggressive and mean that no other species wants to put them to the test.
All they got to do is go grrr at someone. Well, I think they mainly got away with it because the Vulcans would constantly compare themselves to the other races they had to deal with. Mm-hmm. This is one reason I stopped watching Enterprise early on was the fact that Vulcans were treating everyone else like, you know, shit. And I don't want to put up with this.
Yeah. And also, the point of the episode where Spock chose between Vulcan or human, I think it's kind of implied in the universe where he ended up dying or just not showing up. He chose to be his more human side instead of his more Vulcan side. And I'm like, why are you having to choose? Just be both.
If we go back to the episode Journey to Babel, this was it was a major point of contention between him and Sarek. Spock's professional, you know, going into Starfleet instead of to the Vulcan Science Academy. Sarek apparently had never considered, he secretly never considered his son as being fully Vulcan. Mm-hmm. And that made him have to admit an emotional problem.
Yeah.
Which further aggravated the situation. You know, poor Amanda. I sometimes felt for her, and I keep thinking, well, all I can think of is that Sarek must have been pretty good in bed for her to tolerate this sort of crap.
Yeah, but he's only good once every 7 years, but I guess someone can just...
Once every 7 years, maybe she needs the other intervening 6 years to recover.
Or maybe they just have an understanding, like, there's a gardener or a pool cleaner, very close friend of the family, air quotes.
Oh, yeah, there's a Vulcan service that keeps track of who's in Pon Farr and such, and maybe the other member of the relationship isn't available. So they put themselves on kind of a citywide bulletin board.
Wait a minute. Oh, that's actually a good... Hold on. We just stumbled upon something.
But then, how many Vulcan women?
Well, Vulcan women go through Pon Farr, right? Because it was...
To, Well, I mean, all I had to go, the only Vulcan woman that was ever shown to any great extent was T'Pol in Enterprise. And again, the less said about that, the better. Uh-huh. If she was typical of Vulcan women.
No, but I think, like, so you're not guaranteed a spouse. My understanding That's was true. That Spock was, he was from a very noble family, very well-off family. So
and they arranged the marriages back then.
So you have the instances where there are single men and single ladies. So, like, that has to be dealt with somehow.
Now, there's something that no one's ever really explored.
Probably because they can't get away with it on TV.
courting rituals and mating rituals on Vulcan. Mm-hmm. Because, yeah, I don't think every marriage could be arranged.
Yeah, exactly. But,
and we're getting way off topic here, but that's why we love you. And so we
like to go on tangents.
We do things like this.
So Spock decides to test himself and go on a kind of like a mini outing. His pet bear cat,
Sela, basically.
Comes to follow him, gets attacked, or saves Spock from an attack of Godzilla. No, it was Godzilla. That was the same scream. I'm surprised they weren't sued into oblivion. It's the Godzilla scream, ladies and gentlemen. You know the one I'm talking about. That's the one that was in the episode. And he gets poisoned. Spock stays with the animals or, you know, nerve pinches the thing. Saves himself. And his younger self rushes off to the local vet and has him come over. And the vet says, look, I can, you know, save your pet, but he'll be in pain for the rest of his life. Or we can ease his suffering. What do you want to do? It's your pet. And Spock does the logical thing and lets his pet die rather than live in suffering. And that's when he decides to become Vulcan. Things are resolved. They go back to the normal time. And there's a joke where, you know, Spock says, or McCoy is upset that he has to calibrate for Vulcans. And Spock goes, ha ha, if I wasn't here, you'd have to calibrate for Andorans.
And McCoy, you know, wanting to, the Forest Kelly wanting to get his licks in for the episode. Is that a joke? Because Vulcans don't joke.
Things change.
Say, you know, down, Fido.
But yeah, it's like, oh, fuck. Is that like standard policy in this time period of the Starfleet where every first officer has to be an alien species? Is there some sort of cultural exchange?
Riker was
but
human.
That's it. That's like almost 100 years later. What I'm saying is this is the not the foundation of the Federation, but it is like kind of in the early days. So
maybe, I don't know. I mean, we really... This kind of demonstrates just how little we know about Starfleet overall.
Mm-hmm.
But that is an interesting point.
Yeah.
Though I was going to bring up something that happened later in this episode when the younger Spock goes and gets the doctor.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the doctor says, you had a reputation for playing what humans call practical jokes. And I thought, well, this is interesting. I'd like to have heard more about.
Oh, you caught that line too? Yeah.
Yeah. You know, Spock playing practical jokes on Vulcans. And
There has to be slash fiction of that somewhere. That was the real reason why the boys were upset.
And also near the end of the episode, before our adult Spock leaves, the younger Spock remarks how he's going to go out and demonstrate the Vulcan neck pinch to his playfellows. And I thought, so we're not going to see another kid brawl?
Oh, Lord. I was really surprised.
Bullying on Vulcan, I mean.
What are the adults doing?
Well, Sarek was just standing there watching from the house.
Yeah, like, what was the logic of that is what I'm trying to say.
I know, and I can't find the logic. Maybe I don't know, toughing the little yard apes up for their endurance test out in the middle of godforsaken Vulcan wilderness.
Yard apes?
You never encountered them?
No, I have not.
or tricycle engines was another...
Tricycle engines.
Was another way of describing them.
Oh, my God. Anyway.
Oh, in this episode, also, technically in terms of animation, I wanted to point out, this episode is an excellent demonstration of a cost-saving measure where you don't, all you see of a character or an animal is a shadow moving across the screen.
Mm-hmm.
You get a lot of that in this series. It was one of the things they did to keep budgets down. Also, except for the transporter room and the briefing room, we don't spend a lot of time on the Enterprise this time.
Nope, but I imagine once they have more of those backgrounds draw, they'll be dropping them in instantly. And I'm fairly certain, like, the many replicated sets we had in Star Trek The Original Series, that we will end up going back to the same desert-type planet over and over again.
Oh, and whereas we didn't have James Wyatt as doing the voice of Amanda Grace, and we had... Majel Roddenberry doing it. Well, that was Mark Leonard as the voice of Sarek in the episode.
Well, he's got to get his paycheck.
True.
He's got to maintain the same voice and cadence so that when the great reveal comes that he was a Romulan spy, it fits canonically.
And the voice of the young Spock was by Billy Simpson, who... he appeared in an episode of Wonder Woman. He appeared in an episode of Arc 2. But he is better known as having been an associate known as Whimsical Will to that great radio personality, Dr. Demento.
Yeah. I'm sure our audience is gasping.
Oh, come on. I cannot be the only person in this room that knows about Dr. Demento.
Uh-huh. It's radio. I'm sorry. Radio was dead long before it was actually dead. Don't me.
I'll you if I damn well want to.
Anyway. So that's the episode Yesteryear of Star Trek the Animated Series, ladies and gentlemen. I give it a good solid A. I liked it.
I'll give it an A+.
Join us again next time, ladies and gentlemen. I think it's Mud's episode, right?
No.
No? What's the next episode?
Hold on. Just one more. Okay. One of our planets is missing.
Oh, that sounds promising. Okay.
We don't get to Mud until much later on.
Okay. Well, enjoy, ladies and gentlemen, and have a wonderful day.
And you people be eight.
Okay.
And listen to Dr. Demento.
Oh, don't listen to Dr. Demento.
Well, I think he's dead now, but...
I give you permission to listen to good things. I am your friend. Anyway, take care, everybody.
Bye-bye.